This episode is sponsored by RX Bar. For 25% off your first order, visit rxbar.com/suspect and enter promo code SUSPECT at checkout.
Carla Brown, who's the only witness who links Lorenzo to this murder at all, by saying that he was kind of the lookout in this alley before the victim was killed. And they also turned over some parts of the police report that had been missing. And it turns out that she was a potential suspect in this murder herself. Some of the detectives that are involved in this case have been accused of, you know, coercing witnesses in other cases.
So I educated myself. I started studying the law. And it came to a point where I couldn't afford an attorney, where I had to represent myself in court between them. I did it for my mother and my family. I didn't do it for myself.
Lorenzo Johnson is now a free man. For decades, he suffered in Pennsylvania prisons for a crime he may not have committed. Some cases of exoneration are clear-cut, with DNA proving innocence beyond a reasonable doubt. But that, of course, is not the standard of innocence in our society. A person is presumed innocent until proven guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. Lorenzo was sentenced to life in prison based on the testimony of one person. Two decades later, defense attorneys learned that the witness was an alternate suspect in the crime, a fact that prosecutors had hidden. In December 1995, Terry J. Williams was shot and killed in an alley near 14th and Market Streets in Harrisburg, just outside of a bar. Months later, Lorenzo Johnson was arrested and charged as an accomplice to the crime. His friend Corey Walker was accused of being the shooter. Yet there was no physical evidence tying Lorenzo to the crime, and Lorenzo maintained his innocence, saying he was in New York at the time of the shooting. Still, in March 1997, both men were convicted and sentenced to life in prison without parole. During the trial, the prosecution relied mainly on the testimony of a woman named Carla Brown, who claimed to witness Walker shoot the victim while Lorenzo served as a lookout. She claimed the two got into a fight with Williams at a bar before the shooting, but the bouncer and a bartender did not remember seeing Lorenzo. In fact, Brown was the only witness to implicate Lorenzo in the crime, and she admitted she had been drinking or using drugs the night of the murder. Additionally, Brown also was a suspect in the case herself, and she did not come forward implicating Lorenzo right after the incident. Instead, Detective Kevin Duffin solicited a statement from her 4 months after the fact. Throughout the trial, several of the prosecution's witnesses, including Brown, contradicted each other's testimonies.
What happened was, you know, I was in New York during the time frame of when this homicide took place. So I had no knowledge of what was going on, and to this day, I only got knowledge of what I got through discovery. So, you know, I'm quite sure you spoke to a lot of innocent people. Like, we have no, if it's an innocent case where they wasn't there, we have no knowledge of what took place. We only know what they turned over to us. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, you know, me being from New York and Pennsylvania, incarcerated for homicide I had nothing to do with, is like being on another planet because you don't know nobody and basically at their mercy because, you know, I came from a family that was basically innocent. I didn't have nobody to go get me a lawyer and things of that nature. So, and I was illiterate. I was illiterate education-wise. I was illiterate to the law at the time.
Critical information was hidden from the defense, Lorenzo's attorney, Neelam Songvi, says.
There was very little information, as Lorenzo said, given over before trial about this key witness, Carla Brown, who's the only witness who links Lorenzo to this murder at all, by saying that he was kind of the lookout in this alley before the victim was killed. So Lorenzo, for decades, tried to find out whether there was any further information about her, you know, whether there was statements or anything he should have been given. And as it turns out, over 20 years later, the prosecutors finally turned over, she had given a police statement that had never been disclosed before. And they also turned over some parts of the police report that had been missing. And it turns out that she was a potential suspect in this murder herself.
And so, the exculpatory evidence was never turned over to defense?
Exactly. Yeah. The only witness to implicate Lorenzo, her statement and associated information was never turned over to the defense until over two decades after his conviction. And as it turns out, because she herself was, you know, potentially involved, she had an incentive to, you know, point the finger at other people. And the statement contained a lot of information that was inconsistent with and contradictory of her trial testimony. So if the defense lawyers had it, they would have been able to do, you know, a much more effective cross-examination when she testified at trial.
Neelan, do you have any reason to believe that she may have been coached by the police?
I think it's possible.
Okay. Anything to lead one to believe that, or...
I think that some of the detectives that are involved in this case have been accused of, you know, coercing witnesses in other cases. So, you know, I think it's possible that something like that happened here. I mean, they could have given her information during the questioning and then given her incentive to deflect attention to herself, away from herself. And Harrisburg is a very small community. And so, you know, if the police had a dislike of somebody or, you know, didn't like people from New York, that's probably information she would have known.
Lorenzo entered prison functionally illiterate. After two decades of self-education behind bars, he was able to represent himself as his own attorney.
I requested this information for 18 years. I requested it steadily to all my attorneys, myself, pro se. It got to a point where after I educated myself, I started studying the law. And it came to a point where I couldn't afford an attorney, where I had to represent myself in court for 3 years. You know, a lot of people give up. You know, the people who don't have attorneys, they give up a lot of times. A lot of times, you know, you're forced to learn the law. So once I got my GED and a couple of college credits, I started studying the law because I knew it was going to come a time that I had to represent myself. So as this was taking place, I was studying little things. So when I first went to prison and I was asking for help and somebody is innocent, I like pretty much laughed at them. So they try to get over on the system. They're not in my situation. And then when my eyes was open, I realized I was one of many. But at that same occasion, like a big book was put in front of me and it was the Pennsylvania Criminal Rules of Procedure. And it's for somebody that could barely read or write. You put a book in front of them that's in Latin and in English, like, you know, that's like trying to read dirt or something, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it was crazy. So a couple of old timers took a liking to me and they started helping me slowly, like, understand the case law and how to go over your transcripts and things of that nature.
A court motion was filed and the prosecution turned over the evidence that had been hidden for 20 years. But the case didn't end up in a new trial. As is often the case in such cases, an agreement was reached.
You know, it is very difficult to get what we call discovery, to get documents turned over, even in a post-conviction case. But, Lorenzo and his attorney were persistent in continuing to ask for it. And as part of negotiations about when the prosecutor would respond to filings and kind of how the litigation would unfold, they agreed to provide some documents in exchange for, some additional time to file responses and things like that on their side. So it was part of sort of the litigation negotiation process in terms of what each side was going to do as far as how they were going to move forward on this petition. Lorenzo's case is completely closed. We were just about a year ago, actually, at this time, preparing to have a multi-day hearing on Lorenzo's claims, especially regarding this witness statement that had never been turned over. And ultimately, the prosecutor offered Lorenzo a resolution to plead no contest to some reduced charges and to not have to be able to walk out of court that day and serve some additional probation, but never have to go back to prison again. So Lorenzo made the very difficult decision, which he can speak to, to accept that resolution. He maintained his innocence. He has never admitted his guilt, but he did accept that what we call no contest plea so that he would have the guarantee of not going back to prison and be able to go home to his family. His mom was very ill, and I think that was, you know, Lorenzo can speak better to that than I can, but I think that was a big motivating factor. And, it's, you know, that's an outcome that happens in a lot of wrongful convictions cases, and it's a really terrible position for someone who's innocent to be put in, but it makes a lot of sense a lot of times to choose certainty of going home that day versus uncertainty of years or even decades more of litigation that could end up in your, you know, your life without parole sentence stands.
I did it for my mother and my family. I didn't do it for myself, you know, and it's bittersweet. I'm bittersweet now about it, you know. It was something that, you know, they basically, you know, she could contest. I didn't want to do it. You know, if it was up to me, I'd still be in prison fighting for my innocence, you know. But at the end of the day, you know, I did 22 years, and my mother is very old. And unfortunately, she passed away last month.
Yes.
And it's crazy because I did it for them. And I feel no innocent person should have to plead guilty to get out of prison. You know, you shouldn't, you know, no innocent person should have to be sentenced to anything.
Folks, today I'm going to tell you about RX Bars. They approached me a few months ago about sponsoring this program. And I thought, well, I don't know if I can do a testimonial for them because I don't eat sweets. I gave up all sweets for about 5.5 years ago. And I thought, well, these would count as sweets, wouldn't they? They're like candy bars. But then I read their core ingredients: egg whites, protein, and dates. That's not candy. That's healthy. And they're really delicious. I'll be honest with you. I am absolutely addicted to their chocolate sea salt bars. They're better, I think, than the candy bars I used to eat as a kid. And they also have all these other delicious flavors. They have mango pineapple, chocolate hazelnut, peanut butter and berries, chocolate sea salt, as I said, coconut chocolate, mixed berry, blueberry, maple sea salt, apple cinnamon, mint chocolate chip, peanut butter and chocolate, which I love, and coffee chocolate. And RX bars are gluten-free, soy-free, and dairy-free. They have no artificial colors, artificial flavors, preservatives, or fillers. RX bars are great for a number of occasions. Breakfast on the go. They snack at the office to push you through till that 3 p.m. slump. You just throw them in your bar for a trip on the plane. I should have done that today. I flew down to work on a story in Texas, and I really got hungry, but I didn't have my RX bars with me. Toss them in your backpack for a bike ride or a hike. Or you can just have them before or after a good hard workout. The egg white stands out as a source of protein that's easy for the body to absorb. Now, these are just really tasty and delicious, and I can't recommend them enough to you. They are very good. Now, since you're listening to Suspect Addictions, for your first order, you get 25% off. Visit rxbars.com/suspect and enter promo code SUSPECT at checkout. Again, for 25% off your first order, visit rxbar.com/suspect and enter promo code SUSPECT at checkout. One more time, folks. For 25% off your first order, visit rxbar.com/suspect and enter promo code SUSPECT at checkout. This is Scott Reeder, founder of Suspect Convictions. I'm joined today by my friend Christine Bunch, who herself was wrongly convicted of murder. Welcome, Christine. What was your impression of the case, Christine?
Honestly, I was blown away that he would be implicated and sent to prison based off of one person's testimony. I mean, that's kind of shocking. You have no physical evidence, no other witnesses, just one lone person, and he went to prison.
Yeah, I mean, and not just for prison for, you know, a few years. I mean, he got a life sentence, and that's what scares me is a lot of times these convictions are very tenuous. I mean, they're based on one person's testimony, or there's nothing supporting it. And, you know, eyewitness testimony in general can be very unreliable. But the police never revealed that the woman was an alternate suspect in the case.
I know. That is mind-blowing. I feel like he should have had disclosure up front and know that this is another person accused of the exact same thing and they're implicating him. Instead, he was left feeling like this woman was just a good Samaritan that stepped up and said, oh, yes, I recognize this guy and I'm a witness and I'm trying to help. I mean, I think that's just disheartening the way they misrepresented her and then lied about her involvement in it.
I just don't, I don't get it. I mean, I really don't. I mean, prosecutors are supposed to adhere to a code of to see justice done. And how not sharing that kind of information is seeing justice done is kind of perplexing to me.
Well, I think somewhere along the line, prosecutors focus more on getting the conviction and the win. And somewhere along the line, they kind of blur that line of the code that they're supposed to be following because they feel like they are handing out justice.
Well, you know, I should tell our listeners that that you are someone who was wrongly convicted of murder, and you served how many years in prison?
I spent 17 years.
And so you know what it's like to be behind bars for a crime you didn't commit. And I guess one of the questions that comes to mind is, what do you think it was about Lorenzo Johnson that made him a more vulnerable member of our society in this sort of case?
I mean, honestly, I think for most people that are wrongfully convicted, it's your lack of education. And I mean, for him, he didn't have a great education when he went in. But for myself, I at least had high school under my belt, but I had no knowledge of the law. So I feel like that lack of education for most people sets them up for failure when they're dealing with the law and they've been accused of a crime. They don't realize the loopholes or the fact that their very words, while seeming very innocent to themselves, can be twisted and turned against them. And then before they know it, they're convicted of a crime that they didn't commit.
Yeah, one of the things that struck me was this guy comes into prison functionally illiterate, and he's in there so long that he becomes a fairly effective attorney for himself. Have you ever seen anything like that before?
Absolutely. Many, many people that come into the prison and say, you know, I'm innocent. I really shouldn't be here. Before you know it, they're taking advantage of whatever education is available to them in there. And they're spending time in the law library so they can work on the case themselves.
You were one of those people, weren't you?
I was.
And is just freedom the only motivation, or are there other things that go through your mind?
I mean, it's easy to get pulled into drama and fights and picking sides in the prison because there's all these different little cliques. And so you need to fit in with people. And for me, being a part of the education system kept me away from all that. And so I felt like my time was in some way useful instead of just sitting there stagnant and getting caught up in the drama that was going on around me. So for me, it was actually an escape to get education or to go to the law library and focus on that. So it wasn't initially just freedom.
So what would be your best advice for a newly released person like Lorenzo?
The best advice is always to get in with a counselor. You don't initially realize the effects of incarceration. And when you're thrown back out into society, usually with virtually nothing, you just kind of shut down in ways that you don't even realize until you're at the bottom of a pit and you're trying to pull yourself up out of it. So definitely counseling, recognizing your triggers. I think all of us have been diagnosed with PTSD, and that ravages many, many people. So working on yourself and giving yourself time to heal and adjust is definitely, I think, the number one priority.
Lorenzo was given a choice to be released from prison immediately if he pled guilty to a lesser offense and walk away from prison, or to continue to fight and proclaim his innocence, you know, perhaps stay in prison for many more years, or, you know, there's always the possibility that a court might decide that his appeals were without merit and he could spend the rest of his life in prison. Do you think less of him for pleading no contest to a lesser offense?
Absolutely not. I completely understand the situation. It's the hardest decision you're ever faced with when they bring you a deal and tell you you can stop everything, you can stop fighting, and you can walk out right now. I believe it's also a very personal decision, because whatever's going on in your life at that time, those things factor in. For him, his mom was ill, and he didn't know if he was ever going to get out of prison to see her. For myself, I made the decision not to take a deal simply because I had a 16-year-old child that I'd given birth to in prison when I first got there. And I felt like the only legacy I could give to him was basically who I am as a person. So I wanted him to see that I was somebody that would stand up for what was right and continue to fight. So I understand taking the deal and walking out, because when I was given that deal, I wanted to take it and I wanted to walk out. But ultimately for me, it was my personal life that factored into that choice. ¶¶